This episode of the Missed Spots podcast is brought to you by Amazon Prime, the amazing service from Amazon that allows you to get free two-day shipping on nearly every item available on their website, plus access to Amazon Prime Music and Prime Video service with tons of movies and TV shows, including the acclaimed original series Transparent, starring Jeffrey Tambor. Now you can get a free three-month trial of Amazon Prime by going to missbots.com/prime. Plus, if you do that, Amazon's going to throw in a free three-month trial of HBO on your Prime Video. Nothing else you have to say or do. You get that for free with this trial as well. That way you can catch up on Game of Thrones, Westworld, or you can watch anything from HBO's amazing back catalog, like The Sopranos, The Wire. It's all there for you. After your trial, you can pay just $99 for the entire year of Prime. Trust me, that sounds like a lot, but as a Prime member myself, that money more than pays for itself in just two-day shipping after just a couple of months. So head over to missbots.com/prime. right now and try Amazon Prime for free for 3 months and join what practically everyone should be a part of, Amazon Prime.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the free event.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game.
Welcome back to the Missed Spots podcast on MissedSpots.com, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and Geek Life Radio. My name is Mike, and with me as always is the Triple H to my HBK. Here's Kevin.
You know, Mike, at this point, I believe you and I reforming DX makes more sense than Triple H and Shawn Michaels reforming DX.
So if we reform DX, that means we formed it before.
Sure.
When did that happen?
A lot of crazy things happen when you're drinking, Mike.
That is true.
This whole angle is just one of the most perplexing things in the world. They took a Undertaker Triple H feud that made no sense and has spun it off into a Brothers of Destruction DX feud that makes no sense, and I am confused.
This entire feud is based around three words. And depending on which team you ask, those three words are different. DX is all about Are You Ready? And Brothers of Destruction are all about Rest in Peace. One of those phrases of three words will reign supreme by the time Crown Jewel comes around.
I actually have three other words that I actually think this is based around. Money, money, money. And so I'm not talking Shane about McMahon. Triple H or Shane McMahon's entrance music or the Money in the Bank music, which are essentially the same thing. The fact that we are getting this possible reunion to bring Shawn Michaels back into the fold in Saudi Arabia, which may or may not be happening right now.
Don't say Saudi Arabia, because WWE hasn't for a week now.
Well, and they shouldn't be. I mean, it's amazing. You have Congress people coming out and saying, don't do this, don't go there. It was always probably a bad idea to take their money and put on these shows in an oppressive regime. But now it's looking like a really, really poor decision. And instead of getting Shawn Michaels coming back to put on an amazing show, hopefully with a guy named like AJ Styles or Daniel Bryan or somebody else, you're putting him in a tag match with The Undertaker and Kane. It's just not how I would have wanted to see it.
No, because fuck what the fans actually want.
Yeah, you know, it's all fan service. It's all what you always talk about in the fact of nostalgia for nostalgia's sake. And we got plenty of that on Raw. And
on SmackDown.
Yeah, well, of course, for, you know, SmackDown 1000, we're going to get, it's going to be nothing but nostalgia and very little storyline. But even though there was some interesting developments there, but on Raw, when you have Seth and Drew McIntyre opening up a show, I feel like every week we say this. Have they fought every single week in some shape or form for the past 6 years? Because it feels like yes.
Yeah. I feel like it was a month ago that we had them for the first time ever, and it was a fantastic match. We were like, yeah, this is great. But I think even you said this was kind of a waste. They should have saved this for a pay-per-view. They should have built something around this other than just a kind of a throwaway match in this feud of six people. And it's like WWE tends to always be, and beating something to death, like, oh, the fans really like Seth versus Drew. Let's send them out there again and again and again and again.
We actually saw it twice because they were involved in the tag match at the end of the evening. It's just absolutely insane to me. The Undertaker and Kane promo video was about as cheesy as you can make it. This was pretty painful to me. Did you have any opinion on that?
No, because they just did the same thing on SmackDown sans Kane.
Yeah, well, they didn't. Undertaker did absolutely nothing on SmackDown.
His entrance and exit was longer by like five times than what he actually said.
That guy's what he earns per hour has to be one of the highest, wages in the history of mankind.
What, can I go to a community college to take a course on how to be Undertaker and make Undertaker earnings?
You know, Mike, there's a lot of wacky things happening on college campuses this day. You never know.
I think Brock Lesnar wages.
Yeah, I think you have to go to California. I believe like UC Davis has a course. The return that everyone is talking about, Tamina, back on our screens. Finally, she's back. She's involved in a tag match for some reason. I cannot comprehend how she still has a job.
Wow.
With all the talent in the women's division. And by the way, I'm not advocating for anyone to ever lose their job. I think that's not what I'm saying. But just the fact that she sticks around with maybe the least talented wrestler in the entire company. Maybe. Definitely in the top five. And never having really anything, even character development wise, but yet, and always injured. I believe she's been injured for 75% of the last 4 years, and yet is still a part of the company, and they want to make it look like she's this dominant force or this force to be reckoned with Nia Jax. I'm sorry, guys. I'm just not buying it. She's been beaten and humiliated over and over again. What's the point?
Wow, Kevin. That I can't believe that you are saying this about such a talented woman who is the first person to ever lift Nia Jax up and slam her to the can. Wait, no, she's not. But I thought we were told that.
We're always
WWE's
told things like that.
Lying to us?
This entire segment was just, first of all, Tamina and Nia Jax in a ring together. There's very few things I've ever wanted to see less. There's no real ability there, and it just, yeah, it's not good. Just not good, guys. And then we have WWE.
Royal Rumble spots.
Oh my
Royal Rumble God. Spots outside of the Royal Rumble.
Why?
We're throwing people over the top rope. They think it counts.
We're meant to believe that Ember Moon and Nia Jax are best friends. Because they are now. Don't worry about why or how or anything or any kind of backstory. They just are. They're best friends. And she's going to team up with Tamina, who just attacked Nia after the bell, to throw her over the top rope to what? Prove it can happen? Do we need to really prove we can pick someone up and throw them over the top rope? No. Nia Jax was involved in the Royal Rumble last year, and she was thrown over the top rope. It's possible. Andre the Giant has been thrown over the top rope. It's possible. So this is the most perplexing and stupid thing, and we get this every year around Battle Royals and Royal Rumbles. We get this whenever there's a Money in the Bank. We have to have someone climb a ladder and grab the briefcase symbolically. Someone needs to be fired over this. Someone needs to, and this is one of the things, I'm never a fan of people losing their jobs. Someone needs to lose their job, and someone needs to make a rule, we never do this stupid bullshit ever again.
Kevin making a WWE great again by firing writers.
I mean, and, oh God, I'm just going to jump ahead to this because I don't care. whoever wrote Trish and Lita's side of their promo needs to be fired immediately. That was one of the most embarrassing things I think I've ever witnessed on TV. Two legendary women, founders of real, I shouldn't say founders because you have Alundra Blaze and countless women before them that were actually real performers, but the resurgence of female wrestling in the WWE, and they're given the most cringeworthy material that they beat into the ground while the crowd groaned. That entire segment was complete garbage. And you have to wonder, at what point does Vince McMahon or someone look at whoever wrote that and say, there's no way you bring anything to the table if you thought that would be good?
This was sleep-inducing. I say that because I did fall asleep during this promo and woke back up and was like, what happened? I thought, well, was it last week that Lita joined up with Trish? That feels like 5 years ago that happened. But, I mean, it kind of was. But the Trish stuff that she has been saying the past couple weeks is just so cringy. Like, I would rather watch, like, Wonder Shows, in one of the most cringy television shows of all time, for 24 hours straight than listen to some of this Trish stuff.
It is perplexing that they do this show every single week and have been doing it for years, and I assume the same writers, and they can't predict when a completely awful segment's going to come off. Sometimes you try something new and interesting and it doesn't work. Sometimes you go to the well once too often. But there are so many instances where you can just look at something on paper and go, yeah, don't do that.
And just look at your performer and be like, would they say that?
Yeah, this is not a thing that they should be doing. It's totally terrible. Now, all that being said, let's bring it back in. Let's talk about something that I really, really enjoyed. And I really enjoyed the Bellas and the Ronda Rousey segment.
Yes, yes.
Not the beginning of it, where smiling Ronda Rousey came out and she acted all hurt and upset. I demand the Bellas tell me why they turned their back on me. That was awful. Whoever decided to do that, shame on you.
Yeah.
But once the Bellas got on the mic and did what
the Bellas do,
which is be dislikable.
Yeah.
Be two people who come off as entitled and smarmy and insulting to the fans, saying things that we know are not true, and coming off as wonderful heels, right? Because they're the kind of people we should be booing. It was wonderful. And then Ronda Rousey goes from, oh, shucks, I'm happy to be here, and I'm really mad that you guys were mean to me, to being a badass.
Yeah.
And to saying, and to throwing some great barbs, some real below-the-belt kind of stuff, talking about John Cena, saying the things that the fans know about the Bellas. And it was the best promo she's ever cut. It was the most believable she's ever been. And this was, I was shocked. Was this segment A little too long. Absolutely. Yeah. They had enough material here for two or three segments, and I think they let it go a little too long. And obviously, you know, Rhonda stumbled a few times because this was all scripted stuff. But she came across as a star, and she came across as a more well-rounded character than ever before, and knocked it out of the park for what her, for what she was asked to do. She did an incredible job, and bravo for that.
Yeah, even there were some low points to it, and you're right with the beginning. I also hated that during the good parts when she made a comment about like having a killer body. She's like, that I'm a badass and I have a killer body, something like that. I was like, Rhonda doesn't need to say that. Rhonda shouldn't say that.
I agree. Yeah.
But got it back on track, and it became like almost even like work shoot like there.
Oh,
and
sure. That's what they were going for.
Yes. Bravo for sure. Best promo she's done for sure. Got me interested. Got me hooked. Got me sitting on the edge of my seat. Like even my girlfriend was like, "Whoa!" She's like, "That's a bit overboard." I'm like, "It's okay. They know that it's being said. This isn't anything crazy." But even she was enthralled by Rhonda at this point in time. So good, like. Really good job with this one. Yeah. And keep on with this. Like, all too often, I feel like we had a promo like this from her a month and a half, 2 months ago. And I'm like, yes, this is the way that she's supposed to be. And then they just went back to smiling all shucks Ronda Rousey. Like, do not lose sight of this. This is the direction.
Yeah, that's the direction she should be going in. And by the way, cut it down a little bit. It was a little overly verbose. It did not need to be. But don't take too much of a good thing and just drive it into the ground. But overall, this has to be an up. The Bellas are exactly where they should be. If they're going to be featured on television, this is the character that they are both born to play. And Rhonda coming off as just the baddest woman on the planet is everything that she's supposed to be. So I'm very happy to see this. This is a little known fact, Mike. Did you know that No Way Jose is still employed by the WWE?
No way.
Nice. I see what you did there, Mike. Yes, he was. And he danced briefly with Kurt Angle in the back. And I'm sure that No Way Jose appears on house shows and all that kind of great stuff. But quick question. Why did they call him up from NXT?
Well, you see, there's a scientific formula behind calling people up from NXT. You see, it's the square root divided by I don't know fucking why.
I literally forgot that he was part of the roster. And when he showed up, I'm like, oh, shit, No Way Jose. I remember. I kind of thought he had some talent at one point.
He did, too. And then he got a call on Sunday saying that he needed to be in Philadelphia by the next night.
We've got an amazing segment. You're going to briefly dance with Kurt Angle. And he's like, yeah, sure, whatever.
How much am I getting paid?
Yeah, he's like, are you still paying me? Okay, cool, I'll be there. Dean loses a match here, and it sets up kind of the continued friction between the Shield as he kind of pushes Seth's help away. These matches, by the way, with the Drew and Seth
with
match.
The Drew and the Shield.
Well, all these matches, these early matches between these guys was all set up for this best in the world tournament that they're holding. Not in Saudi Arabia.
World Cup.
Yeah.
All American World Cup.
And I kind of would have been happy if this would have been the only thing we had to see on the show. But no, they have to set up the main event, which is for the third televised show in a row. For Raw, we're getting the same match.
Yeah.
Mind-boggling. I mean, you would think that there are literally no one else on the roster with how much they are featuring the Shield and the Dogs of War, if we're still calling them that. It's
we're apparently not, because Drew earlier said that we don't need kitschy little nicknames for our team.
Even though they've been calling themselves a kitschy little nickname.
Yeah.
Yeah, I not a fan of that. Also not a fan of seeing Finn Balor fight Jinder Mahal. And thankfully, this was short and sweet, and maybe the last of this feud, if you could call it that, because good old Bob Lash and his friend Leo Rush came down after their match and kind of stole some thunder there and kind of rubbed it in Finn's face that Bob Lash has the best physique in the entire company. Now, I think they're going to fight over who has a lower percentage of body fat. I think that's what we're going towards.
That's a tight contest.
Yeah, I just think it's going to be a really interesting thing where they're gonna wrestle for a little bit to get their cardio up, and then they're going to retreat to their corners where a doctor measures their body fat, and then whoever, you know, has the lower one wins.
And in the first ever WWE match, the loser must eat carbs match.
It's a big pile of mashed potatoes and gravy.
Yeah.
Whoever loses has to eat it. Wonderful. They can do it for Thanksgiving.
Oh, yes.
Did you just do Paul Bearer?
I didn't mean to. I really didn't mean to. And then afterwards, I'm like, I can't believe I just did that.
It is a shame that we are not cheesy radio disc jockeys, because if we could isolate that clip, I would play that constantly. I believe at this point that I have an unhealthy dislike for Leo Rush in the fact that he makes my life worse. So anything I'm doing, I enjoy less when hearing Leo Rush talk. So I've been recently, this is some really exciting stuff here, I've been recently cataloging my old sports cards, you know, looking back, trying to find some of the more valuable ones. And I find it rather cathartic to kind of turn my brain off and do that. And I do it, you know, sometimes during wrestling. And when Leo Rush is on, and my entire, just like, I see red, and I hate everything on my screen and everything around me. I know he's a heel and he's supposed to do that, but he's not supposed to make me dislike my life. He's supposed to make me dislike him. He's doing both.
Maybe Leo Rush should be used as some sort of therapy for people who want to like quit smoking. Like listening to him talk while smoking will get them so disgusted by the fact that they smoke that they'll just be like, nope, not doing it anymore. Every time I smoke, I hear this guy talking.
If you associate those two things together, absolutely. In fact, I believe that if you had Leo Rush and Enzo Amore in the same talking segment, the entire world would implode. I believe that they say...
Are you sure they don't cancel each other out?
No. Top scientists believe that it's like meteor, supervolcano, global warming, Leo Rush, and Enzo Amore. Those are the most likely things to destroy the universe. It's effective. He's a heel, and good old Bob Lash is a much better performer for it.
Yeah, I just hope he really is.
I just hope that there's an end game here. I hope it results in something more than 50-50 booking against Finn Balor. As much as I love Finn, both these guys need to do something. And a feud against each other where nobody actually comes out looking better is not the answer.
No.
Are we supposed to like Kurt Angle, Mike?
I think.
We're supposed to like Kurt Angle. That was a rhetorical question, by the way. And are we supposed to like a guy who sends out some poor schlub in a giant gold body condom to be beaten up by two monsters in his stead? I would posit no. That doesn't seem like a thing that a good guy would do. But that's what Kurt Angle did. And we all like it and enjoy it because he wasn't really a part of the match and he got to angle slam Baron Corbin, which I'm always a fan of. Hurting Baron Corbin is a good thing. But I have a hard time liking Kurt Angle after that segment.
Yeah, I'm not. This was just filler to me. I know that this is a story that is supposed to be top notch right now. Is Kurt? Kurt is still technically the GM. Baron's the. I don't care. I knew that this was going to come at some point. That we'd have to have them kind of going head to head, but I just don't care. We know that Baron's going to probably somehow cost him his match at Crown Jewel, and then we'll have a Baron versus Angle match at Survivor Series for who gets total control of Raw, because Raw versus SmackDown. Oh my God, I feel like I'm right here.
You sound so sad about what's yes. going on in your brain. I really did like the Battle Royal the week before. I will take that to my grave with me. Yeah. But yeah, I just, you know, authority figures bickering is my least favorite thing in pro wrestling, other than several other things in pro wrestling. I'm running out of things to say about the Riot Squad. This week we were led to believe that smearing ketchup and mustard on Natalya's dressing room was a very rebellious and shocking thing to do. In fact, I believe it was Liv Morgan who smeared her hand all over the ketchup on the door. That'll show her. And then we have the commentary team talk about how effective the Riot Squad has been. I would wager a good portion of my income for next year that the Riot Squad combined have won close to 25% of the matches they've had televised. And I think I'd be right. Please stop telling us that people are dominant when they constantly lose. That's not the way it works. If you want them to be dominant, book them to be dominant. If they're not dominant, start booking them to be dominant. And they never do this. These friendships now with Bayley and Sasha are best friends with Natty. And
ooh, what a return for Sasha to be in the corner of someone.
This idea that all the women have to have best friends and they're always involved and fused with each other just continues to drive me up a goddamn wall.
And might I also add that if the Riot Squad are the most dominant team in women's wrestling and manage to have two of them put into a submission hold by a single person at the same time, then I am the most dominating single person in the history of the world.
Your logic is flawless, Michael.
No one try to debate me or take me to task on that claim.
You can't deny it. I also have to point out that Sasha and Bayley are now meaningless. They are meaningless characters that get no crowd reaction, that have not been relevant in a very long time. And at one point, Sasha Banks was in the best... At one point, these two were in one of the best feuds, not just women-wise, but one of the best feuds that has ever happened on WWE television and NXT. At one point, Sasha Banks was the forerunner of the division with Charlotte. And at this point, they are worse than afterthoughts. They are now just non-entities in the WWE, and it is so sad to see.
Yeah. If I gotta suffer through hearing Michael Cole say it's boss time, then I want her to at least be at the top of this division and be a major part of storylines, a focus of writing, and good writing at that, not this terrible, shitty writing that we've seen for the past what feels like a year with Bayley. That's what I just want that for her. She deserves that. I hate to say that people deserve that, but she is a person. I don't know. Maybe she's a total bitch backstage. I don't think so. I've never heard anything like that, but this is a girl who has worked her ass off in this industry and is supremely talented on the mic, in the ring. And this is what she gets. Fuck. Yeah.
It's a shame for both of them. It was nice going into the next segment, seeing Apollo Crews being featured and saying that he's going to take now, or he's going to be a serious performer now. We've seen this a couple times from him, and we love Apollo Crews. We both were very high on him when he was signed by by WWE and thought that he had a very high ceiling. I do find it bizarre that we always talk about how Elias never really has feuds, and that you really cannot even point to a pay-per-view that he was really involved in a actual match with a culmination of a feud of any kind. And he's now, we're resetting, because when Elias showed up, he was involved with something with Apollo Crews almost immediately. I feel like we're now just going to restart recycling all the people that he's had non-feuds with, just so they can keep putting him on TV to insult the crowd with a good old-fashioned sing-song. And I do like Elias, but it'd be nice to see him actually have some kind of evolving storyline with an individual person. Maybe Apollo Crews is the one.
Yeah, maybe it is. I feel like this, we're a broken record when it comes to this. We keep saying this over and over and over again. How long before we just realize, like, they're not doing that with him? I mean, we can keep saying this will be the one, but it just keeps on being more of the same with him.
It does. And speaking of more of the same, the main event in the match that I like to call, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing this again match. The entire story of what will happen with Dean Ambrose is rather compelling. But what we ended up having was the Strowman, Dolph, and Drew faction dissolve at the end of this match because the Shield ends up going over. Is this what you expected, or are you, where are you at now? I know you've been a big fan of this this storyline with Dean as well.
I think that this was a bit of a swerve. It's not a total swerve because we did get some teases at the other side from a couple weeks ago. There was they were tempting Dean, there was some tempting of Drew. It wasn't a full-on just Drew turning on everyone. I mean, obviously, he's still one half of the tag team champions with Dolph. It's them turning on Braun, if not Braun turned on them first. I don't know. It, whatever. But I'm glad to see that this with them is finally over. I hope some of this Dean stuff still carries over into whatever goes on after this, because it is intriguing. I do want to see something come of that. And, you know, I'd be okay with a swerve to where it's not even Dean who turned. It's someone turns on Dean. Like, if Seth were to turn heel, which I think would be a bad idea because he is pretty over as a babyface, even though he's lost some steam because of the Shield. But something like that, I think, could work. But this is just all fantasy booking at this point in time. But if we get a Drew Braun match out of it, or maybe a little feud after the title match, I'd be okay with that. I remember the first time we kind of saw them stand off against one another, and I thought Drew versus Braun, the match I never thought that I wanted.
Yeah, it's a compelling pairing. It's just, I wonder what that means. Do they just basically reset Braun as a babyface again? Because obviously they turned him heel because he had to be heel going up against Roman Reigns, and they're just going to go, okay, let's do a do-over. He's a babyface again and going up against Drew McIntyre.
What if they made Drew and Dolph the baby faces in this?
I think they could, but man, Drew does such a good job as a heel. I think he's a better, I mean, listen, it's hard to say that. Braun Strowman is literally a monster, so being a heel is in his wheelhouse for sure. But I really do like Drew as a heel. I think he's excelling at that in that spot.
Yeah, and I think that he could do a very good job with that up against Braun. Yeah, I guess you're going to have to somehow shoehorn him back into being the babyface. But yeah, it could be really fun. And they have been protecting Drew. Drew doesn't take pinfalls. Drew doesn't submit. he might get counted out. He might be on a losing team, but he's not the one taking the falls.
Yeah, and when he does, or he has taken a few pinfalls here, yeah, they're always wonky.
Usually to Seth.
Yeah. Well, Seth's the only person he fights, so yeah, if he's going to take a pinfall, there's no one else. Who's he going to take it to? Doink?
What's Doink doing here at Raw? Just to pin Drew McIntyre?
He's there to pin Finn Balor, actually. That would make a lot of sense. Mike, I think we should talk about the most important show we've ever seen, SmackDown 5000 or whatever the hell we're doing.
2071.
Yeah.
So the introduction was a lot of video montages a video montage, not a whole lot of them, containing clips of past SmackDown moments. And there were some ones in there that I was pretty surprised by, such as like the Big Show Boss Man funeral thing.
Which was one of the worst things ever put on television.
Yeah, and not only did they show that there, but they talked about it again later on in the episode. All of the many marriages that didn't happen on SmackDown. It was interesting, to say the least. And talking about interesting, Truth TV, which was... the only way I can put it is dance break involving all of the McMahons.
Anytime they do one of these shows, which is basically like a greatest hits tour, that they do these things, they always have to shoehorn as many stars from yesteryear into them as possible. And you knew you had to get Shane and Stephanie and Vince in there. And they ended up doing it in the most, like, a standoffish way that ends in all of them dancing. And I was like, oh, this is going to stop with something and they'll make a match or something. Nope, that was it. R-Truth and Carmella, charming. I'm fine with that. I would have liked to see... the segment of theirs go on without the McMahons, because every time I hear Shane McMahon's music, all I think is, oh, he hasn't been away long enough. And every time I hear Stephanie's music, I hear, oh God, now we have to watch her on Tuesday. And then I hear Vince McMahon's music and I go, oh, the crowd's loving him. Don't they realize he's the one that's crushing their dreams? At some point,
they never
Don't you go, hey, that's that guy that doesn't know what a burrito is and didn't realize that Asian women were attractive. He has serious mental problems. We should probably get him help.
You see, they look at it as there is a difference between Vince, Mr. McMahon, the character, and Vince McMahon, the guy who believes that sneezing is a sign of weakness.
Exactly. I mean, I'm just postulating this now, and it was kind of a joke, but I really think someone needs to get that man help.
You think?
He's not a healthy person. I have no interest in the McMahon family drama. At least they kept this to a minimum, and they all ended up dancing around for some reason. Sure.
Yeah. This was followed up by proof. This was experiment number, I believe it is 52,327 of, let's have the opponents in a upcoming championship match tag together and see if they can actually get through a match. Failed again. 100% failure in every one of those experiments. AJ and Brian lose to the Usos because of miscommunication.
This is such a weird thing for me, because first of all, the Usos came out and I go, oh shit, I really like those guys. Where have they been? That was my first reaction. And I believe they set this tag match up the week before. Did they not? Or didn't they set something up the week before?
If they did, I completely missed it.
When we've had people that were in a feud tagging together in the past, it was set up for a reason. There was some kind of storyline reason for them to tag. Maybe they had a mutual enemy that they, or enemies that they had to ward off before they could square off themselves, or there was a storyline authority figure that was putting roadblocks in front of them. What conceivable reason is there for them to tag against the Usos? There's none. They didn't even give us they didn't even try. And when Corey Graves are like, well, can they coexist? Why do they need to? Are they going after the tag team championships? If they win this match, are they next in line for the titles? No, this match means nothing. There's no reason for them to be tagging, and there's no reason for them to have any kind of cohesion. Why does any of this matter? And then we get the most cheesy and repetitive finish to it possible. If anything, they could have set this up, had them actually go through, have a perfectly fine situation, win the match, and then go their separate ways, and that would have been more surprising than what happened.
Yeah, it pretty much would have been. I'd also like to add that in that experiment that I so mentioned, that usually half of the time, those strange bedfellows do win tag team titles, but they usually still never end up being fine, by the way, it all ends. Also, that is called a joke.
Was it, Mike? Was it a joke?
No. We're playing opposites now, right?
Yeah. Someone please explain to me why this match happened. I don't think that there is anyone that has that kind of capacity for, like, five-dimensional thought to make that work.
Actually, I now know why this happened. It's SmackDown 1000. The only logical explanation is that Teddy Long made it off camera. He loves tag team matches.
And by the way,
Undertaker wouldn't be in the match. So he was like, oh, AJ and Brian versus the Usos. Okay, player.
By the way,
holla holla.
I would have accepted that. I would have been dumb, but at least they were trying. I now have a nine month old son, and what do I want to do? Listen, you got to try. You got to give it your all, even if it's wrong. You know, give it a shot. Hey, SmackDown writers, even if it's a stupid idea, at least use an idea. Not having one is somehow worse.
Yeah,
that was my pep talk to the SmackDown writers.
You got me all worked up over it.
Yeah.
Kevin, I have two questions for you. And let me get them both out here before you answer. First, who is the best member of Evolution? And two, why is it Batista?
He was certainly the best member in this promo. I would say that. I don't. Are we setting up for Batista and Triple H at WrestleMania? Is that what this is
possibly
leading to?
If they're not, then they're teasing the fuck out of people. And you, I've beaten this to death. We've even talked about it in this episode. I hate nostalgia for the sake of nostalgia. I'm kind of wanting Batista versus Triple H. I'm down with that. I think that Batista's last run was highly underrated, especially when he turned heel.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel bad for him because of the backlash that he wasn't Daniel Bryan, and that's kind of a shame, and I am a huge fan of the MCU, and I love the work he's done at Guardians of the Galaxy and the range that he showed in his character, and so I can definitely see this happening, and if you're going to put Triple H in a match with somebody like that, I think this is one that actually kind of works. It's someone that we'd like to see in the ring again. That team of Evolution is a really impressive group of guys, and it was kind of fun to see them in the ring together. And overall, other than kind of, you know, spouting their own accolades, there really wasn't much meat here on the bone unless it sets up a future storyline, and it will be nice to see a nostalgia act set up a future storyline. So I'm kind of hoping that it happens.
I am too. I'm not even going to say I hate to admit it, because I am admitting it. This is a match that I wouldn't mind seeing, because we know that Triple H can still pretty much go. I have a feeling if Batista's given enough time, he can still probably put together a pretty decent 15-minute match. And I would really love to see the promo work between the two of them, because Batista has become, I think, an underrated promo guy. I think it's just been so long since he's been in a full-time run that we forget that he got pretty damn good towards the end of his first major run as being that heel character that he was. And he showed some of that in the last run that he had as well. But yeah. I do have a feeling he'll be that cool baby face though this time around.
You'd imagine. I can't imagine Triple H playing a baby face here.
Yeah. We got a very short, very quick the World Cup qualifying match. Miz beat Rusev via a schoolboy roll-up, and then Rusev just beat the hell out of Aiden.
And they actually cut away while the beatdown was still happening. This reeked of, oh shit, we were supposed to do this, and we have no time for this. Hey, you guys go out there and make this happen as fast as possible.
Yeah.
And that's what this whole thing felt like.
Yeah, Aiden just popped up from nowhere to be like a distraction. It was almost like, hey, I'm here, we got to do this now.
Yeah, definitely an interesting way to put that on. Miz being involved in this tournament, I think, is a good thing. He's one of the few kind of like not throwback guys, it feels like, on there, even though I know he's part of the old guard because he's been around forever. But he, for some reason, he feels so much fresher than Rey Mysterio and Kurt Angle and I can't even remember other people that are involved in the thing. But so that's kind of a good thing to have Miz involved in there.
I think I saw someone mention that when all was said and done with all the people who are in this World Cup, Seth is the only one who was not in WWE 11 years ago.
That's not surprising.
So Cutting Edge was next, and I did not get to see all of this because my cable went out probably towards the end of it from what I'm gathering. So not only did we get a nice little cameo of Tony Chimmel introducing Edge, but Edge brings out Becky and actually tries to talk her into like not being the way that she is, saying that friendships are important. She shouldn't throw them away. I burnt all these bridges and I got really nothing out of it other than just looking at some titles up on my wall. I feel bad for having did all of that. Now you can fill me in a little more, as to what happened exactly after that. But from what I understand, like Becky did a good job of turning this around on him.
Well, Becky just basically said that, hey, like, it doesn't matter. Like, this is what I'm going to do. I love me. I love the way I am and what I'm doing. And basically, short and sweet, said, get out of my ring and watch out before you hurt your neck again. Charlotte came down and short and sweet and then speared her, and then they fought on the ground for a little bit. But the crowd's still way behind Becky, booing Charlotte. If they were trying to use Edge here to get boos for Becky, it did not work. Because, as I've mentioned multiple times, Becky is effortlessly cool. And that's something that the crowd right now really wants to cheer. So that's what we end up getting. And she came across good here again. She's as confident as she possibly can be. And she looked right at home with a legend in the ring with her, which was great for her.
Nice. I have another question, Kevin. And it is, for this tag team match, why Big Show?
This is going to be talked about by wrestling scholars for years to come, Mike. I believe that this is going to be the... Well, first of all, it is... This is not only...
This is the Franz Ferdinand assassination of...
something like that. No, so this was SmackDown 1000. It was also Big Show's 1000th turn from heel to babyface.
He's turned five times already in 2018, and he's only been on three episodes.
So, yeah. So it was 1000th turn. They did. It was not as highly publicized, but he got a cake when he came back. It was in the shape of a giant fist. And it was very perplexing of why Big Show would side with why he showed up in the first place. Everyone's confused. Aligning himself with Sheamus and Cesaro, very bizarre. I mean, they literally put the titles on his shoulders at the end and raised his hands. He's evening the odds against the New Day, but it seems like a strange person to do that with. Maybe there's some good storyline reason for this. Maybe this will end up being something really interesting. You always hope that this is like some kind of master plan with some interesting groundwork laid for the future. My gut reaction tells me they were like, hey, Big Show's back and we don't have anything for him to do. Why don't you go and get involved in the tag team match tonight and we'll figure something out next week. That's what my gut tells me is going on, but I hope they've got more to it than that. But we do have new tag team champions.
And Big Show's too nice of a guy to question. He probably even knows, this doesn't make any sense for me to be out here, but I'm going to go do it because that's what the boss said to do.
Sure.
Yeah, this... every person in the world was confused by Big Show being out there. Big Show was confused. It was like the time that Grandpa with Alzheimer's just walks up onto the stage of the presentation being done for the entire nursing home, and the nurses are like, what's he doing? But the other one's like, no, just let him go. That's what he does. That's probably not what it was like at all. But
probably not, Mike. But, you know, you're trying.
So we got Big Show. All right. Good for him. Shinsuke Nakamura and Rey Mysterio coming out. My girlfriend asked if Rey Mysterio is like one of the older wrestlers, and I said yes. His music is performed by POD, if that's any indication of how long he's been around.
That music's awful, by the way.
Yes, it is.
Really bad.
No, it wasn't awful. His music that he used in WCW.
What it was, his original music that he had in his first WWE run was annoying, but it wasn't that bad.
I don't even remember what that was.
Yeah. Look it up after we get off. After we're done.
You're
with
not
going to
sing it for me?
I was actually this close to doing it, and then I realized what a terrible idea that would be. This was a very sad thing for me.
Yeah.
Because the crowd really only popped for the moves, like the 619 and a few of his moves. They really didn't even pop for him when he came out. And this was supposed to be a big return. And for a big return, I guess you can sacrifice your United States champion who hasn't been featured on any of the pay-per-view or special cards and has even been a ancillary character in his own feuds for the past several months. So, okay, you want to feed him to Rey Mysterio for a big return. But to have the crowd mostly sit on their hands and watch Shinsuke lose again and be a non-entity again. And to have the secondary strap on his shoulder. This is just, why would you continue to do this? What does this serve? When Nakamura drops that title to somebody, and that'll be like any hour now with the way they've booked him.
Or it'll be 4 years from now because they forgot about the title.
What benefit will it have if this is how you portray him?
None.
Shinsuke Nakamura is not benefiting the company at all, and the company's not benefiting him at all except for the paycheck that goes to him, and I'm sure he enjoys that. But man, I just gotta feel bad for a guy like Nakamura who could have really set the world on fire when he showed up.
Yeah.
And every time he wrestles, I'm reminded of it, and every time it's like, it just makes me feel terrible.
It absolutely does. It depresses me to no end just seeing that this is a guy who we love so much and just being treated so poorly. I mean, hopefully he makes good money and he gets to support his family and whatnot, but I just can't understand how anyone can be happy doing that. I you'll hear the people go, I get to do what I love and support my family, blah, blah, blah. But do you really love doing that when you were like one of the top two guys in your home country for so long? You were adored by millions.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks. Then Undertaker came out, said some words, and he left. And that was the end of SmackDown 1000.
Yeah.
Were either of these shows good to you?
I liked parts of both, but, you know what? This is what I thought about these shows. You missed the fact that Undertaker, like we said, came out and said a word and left. That was what epitomized.
I didn't miss it. I said it really fast.
Well, I know, but I'm saying
just about like, as quick as the thing went.
That's true, but we didn't talk about it. That was the epitome of these shows. It's all nostalgia. It's all hype and no substance, because none of what they're setting up and doing actually pay off is going to have any substance to it. So even though there were some good parts of these shows, at the end of the day, none of it's going to be memorable and none of it's going to be important.
You know, can they just make a brand like NXT, Raw, SmackDown, a brand just for the old guard so that I don't have to watch them on Raw and SmackDown every week, taking up time, taking up space from the younger guys who I really want to watch, who I really want to see get pushes, who I really want to see the attention being given to? Give them their own brand, give them their own show, put them all in a house together and see what happens. Oh yeah, they did do that. But I don't want to see this anymore. Sans a couple handfuls of people who can actually go, who are actually interested in, are interesting in storylines that they, are in, and who are, can actually make a younger talent better coming out of it. If you're not going to do that, then I don't fucking care. And it doesn't mean anything. I don't like, you know what? Maybe it's great to see Austin or whoever pop up every once in a while, but if it's just to fucking stun someone like Rusev or the New Day, for what? Just some cheers? It does nothing for the product. And that's what this DX versus Brothers of Destruction thing is. It's like you said earlier, a waste of a Shawn Michaels match that could be used for a guy like AJ Styles, for Daniel Bryan, for infinitely any other people. Just frustrated as hell with this shit.
Yeah, I feel you, Mike.
Well, I got that off my chest.
I'm just glad that we were able to talk about this and work out our feelings.
Yeah, that's what you've been telling me in our after episode sessions that we have, that I need to talk about my feelings more.
Well, that's what people don't realize, is that we actually do about an hour episode every week, and then we do a
how much you charge me.
We do a We do a 3-hour cool down conversation, where we do some affirmations and we look in the mirror and we say how proud we are of ourselves. And that's an important part of this entire thing.
I'm good enough.
Yeah. This is just basically therapy. We don't do this for anyone else's enjoyment. I mean, heavens no.
Wait, you mean that other people listen to us?
Hey, listen, you're the one that tells me that we're on the internet. I still never found it, and I don't believe you. But we do talk into microphones once a week, and you say it goes out there into the airwaves.
We'll get you hooked up in 3 to 5 years.
Okay, I'm okay with that. Baby steps.
Anything else you want to talk about on this episode before we wrap up?
I don't believe so, sir.
All right. Well, that does it here once again for another episode of the show. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. In the meantime, make sure that you check us out on social media. We are at Miss Spots on both Twitter and Instagram. You can follow along. We're live tweeting along to Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, and usually all of the pay-per-views, although it's getting harder and harder now that they're doing them in foreign countries on different days and different times, but we do our best. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/MissSpots. You can listen to this podcast in one of many different wonderful fashions, whichever fits your needs, such as our website, MissSpotsPodcast.com or simply MissSpots.com. You can also find us on one of the many different podcast streaming services such as iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Podcasts, Podcast Addict, Overcast. Any of those, you can subscribe to this show and get brand new episodes delivered to the device of your choice every Thursday free of charge. You can also listen to us on Geek Life Radio every Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central at geeklifradio.com. For Kevin, my name's Mike. We'll catch you guys next week. Good night. Good wrestling.